Okay, Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Kuf Tet. And I'd like to go over with you a little bit of what we did on Kuf Chet Amud Beit, so that we could actually flow in today's daf, especially for those chayalim on the buses who have a hard time concentrating, and who we only spent 6 hours already on this over Shabbos. I'm sure we'll appreciate an extra couple of minutes. So, what I'd like to begin with is Ve'ev Shebesochto Atzmo Tanoihi, because we left off in the middle of that yesterday. All right, so you will recall that what we're talking about over here is specifically the Dinim of Basar V'Chalav. And as we mentioned yesterday, when it comes to basar v'chalav, chaticha naaseit nevela and efshe lesochto boil down to the same issue. Because if we take a look at basar v'chalav as being a completely new entity, then it would be absurd to talk about squeezing out the milk from the meat, because that's not the point. The point is that these two substances were, in fact, cooked together, and that made them usher, and that's all there is to it. The fact that the cooking initially may require taste to be defined as cooking does not define the ongoing status of the basar v'chalav. So over there, if you hold chaticha naaseit nevela, you also hold that efshe lesochto asur. To give you an illustration of where efshe lesochto has nothing to do with chaticha naaseit nevela, let's take a situation where you have a piece of meat, and there was a piece of chelev right next to it. The single piece of meat absorbed all of the chelev and then was mixed with other pieces of meat. If you hold that, as the Rabbeinu Ephraim holds, and this is the way we've been learning, that chaticha naaseit nevela is only meaningful when it comes to the isur basar v'chalav, but it's not something we would say about all isurim, then the question would be, that first piece, if it's now put into a much more dilute concentration, so that originally it was one piece in a little bit of soup, and now you put it into a big soup, and now there's enough to be mevatel the taste in shishim. Can you squeeze out the taste by redistributing the molecules of the original taste throughout the now much bigger amount, and therefore come out with less concentration in the piece, and then the piece itself reverts to its original status of just being a piece of meat without the taste of fat in it? Well, if there's no taste of fat, then the piece of meat is mutter. That's not the same thing as basar v'chalav, which may not need an ongoing taste of milk in order to be basar v'chalav. So there, if you hold efshe lesochto mutter, the piece itself now becomes mutter. It no longer tastes like chelev. There's nothing magical about that. Now, let's take a look at the sugya of chaticha naaseit nevela and efshe lesochto, which are actually boiled down to the same issue, in basar v'chalav. So yesterday, the Gemara suggested that the concept of efshe lesochto, so we're approximately one-third of the way up on the daf, a little bit higher, efshe lesochto atzmo, this is on Amud Beis, itself is a machlokas tanoim. And now we're going to go out to prove to you that it's a machlokas tanoim, which is not immediately obvious, even though you may think it is. And the Tanya, let's take a look at the Braita, which we're trying to use as our source. The Braita seems to simply repeat what Rav said earlier. This time it says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, but we'll see that the truth is it's more chomer than what Rav said earlier as we go through the sugya. So the Tanya, tipat chalav shenafla lachaticha, this is our classic case. You have a drop of milk, it falls on one piece of meat. That piece of meat, according to Rashi, was not fully immersed in the rotav. According to Tosis, was not in the rotav at all. According to many of the other Dizer, it was our first level issue that we had discussed. Do we say that once something is in one part of itself connected to the medium of the water or the soup, that that itself would allow the tam to disperse throughout the mixture? Tosis holds yes. Rashi holds no. And we'll see exactly what we're basing this on in the sugya as we go along. So a drop of milk falls on a piece of meat. Once there's a taste of milk in that piece of meat, that piece of meat becomes an avela. But once that piece of meat becomes an avela, all other pieces of meat in that mixture, even if there are thousands of them, they will become usur because min bimino isn't batal, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And since this piece of meat is no different than any other piece of meat, and it's nevela, it is going to usur the entire mixture. Now, so far, this sounds very familiar because it's literally word for word what Rav is saying. Now, why don't you adjust those tefillin a little bit there? Don't you have a video screen? In ancient times, people used to have these pieces of glass that they sort of silvered the back on, or they used it just to reflect. They could tell if their tefillin were on right. Okay. So the Chachamim disagree. And they say, we don't believe that that would be true. We believe, now what this seems to be saying, it's not 100% clear, but what it seems to be saying, 95%, is that until what is titain? Until the drop. We're still talking about the drop, right? One drop of milk. It all started with that little drop of milk that walked into the bar, and so on. So now, if that drop doesn't have enough in it to give a taste to the entire mixture, then nothing would be usur. Okay, so far, everything clear. They apparently hold that there is no such thing as chaticha nasis nevela. Either the whole thing is usur or the whole thing is mutter, and that's all there is to it, right? That's a simple reading. Now let's analyze this braita the way Rebbe spoke about it, and then we will see where we definitely have a machlokas. Omar Rebbe, I believe that Rebbe Yehuda is correct. Now, Rebbe is introducing a new issue that we didn't talk about before. And Rav, we don't know about Rav. We suddenly are bringing this up in Rebbe Yehuda according to Rebbe. So what Rebbe says is, I think Rebbe Yehuda is right in the event that you never mixed it or you never covered it. That's what it seems to be saying. And the Chachamim are right, if you did mix it or you did cover it, why would that be? Well, it's very simple. I mean, if you never stirred it, so then all of the power of that little drop of milk never got through the whole mixture, it wasn't dispersed, and therefore it was in a very high concentration only on the piece unto which it fell, and that would mean that that piece would become usur. Well, that makes sense. But I think the Chachamim are right. If you were mixing it, well, if you were mixing it, then that little drop of milk put a taste into the entire mixture. And if there's not enough for the drop of milk to make the entire mixture taste like milk, then it would not be usur. Okay, a very reasonable statement. The only problem is that it's a bit opaque, because remember that when we're talking about chaticha naaseh nevela, we have to first have an opportunity for the piece of meat to get the super concentrated mixture, right? And then we need an opportunity for that piece of meat to usur the other piece of meat. So there's got to be a time in which you're not mixing, and then a time in which you then mixed. So, I mean, the simple case would be, forget about mixing, you simply took that piece and put it in another pot. We're talking about over here where there were plenty of pieces in the pot initially, and now the question was, there is apparently a gap. There's a little bit of time in which the piece becomes usur, and then you stir it, and then that piece, which is now giving its taste, the taste of the meat, there's not enough there in the milk, but the taste of the meat, which will now go throughout the mixture, that I believe is actually what Rebbe Yehuda was saying. But that's not what Rebbe says. He just says he never stirred it, never covered it. The Divrei Chachamim, well, you did stir it, you did cover it. So what did he mean? He couldn't mean what we just said. I mean, when Rebbe said he didn't stir it at all, or he didn't cover it at all, I mean, that wouldn't make sense. Because if he meant ilema lo nia klal velo kisa klal, so then what would happen? What would happen is that the milk would aser the piece of meat that it fell on, and it would remain entrapped in that piece of meat, right? Now, if I'm not stirring that piece of meat, how did the taste of that piece of meat get into the entire pot? It's not circulating. Okay, now this is why Tosfos learns that we're talking about that it wasn't in the pot at all, because otherwise it's a ridiculous question. The bottom of the piece is in the pot, so why wouldn't it be able to circulate through basically just the circulation of the water that will get to the top of the piece? Okay, so therefore must mean that the entire piece was raised above the level of the gravy. Rashi learns that unless you have circulation, and he says this very clearly, because when he talks about covering the pot, he says, you know why covering the pot is good? Because when water boils, it foams up to the top of the pot and then circulates. It comes down again. Why does Rashi say it comes down again? Because that's Rashi's entire vision. He even uses the words, the taste of the milk is on the top of the piece, is what he says. So as Rashi holds that you need active circulation in order for it to be halachically meaningful, the taste. Okay, so therefore, that's just a logistical question between Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim. But the point over here is, whatever the situation is, if it needs circulation, even if it's in the pot, if it doesn't need circulation, what did Rebbe mean? If he meant that, according to him, if you never did anything at all to circulate the water, so then how did the piece of meat ever aser the rest of the pieces of meat? Even if you hold that the din is that min bimino is aser, there has to be some mixture, doesn't there? I mean, it's not min bimino is aser just because it's looking at each other. I mean, so where was the circulation of the time of the min bimino? There's got to be an act of time. Now, I must tell you that after we come out of this whole circuit, there is the sheet of the Ran, and some are machmer like that, that you do not need for there to be any circulation for min bimino to be us, according to Rebbe Yehuda, which we don't pass. Okay, but in any event, getting back, I'm just trying to make sure you have all of the information so that I don't mislead you into thinking things are simpler than they are. But we're going to continue to look at it in a very simplified fashion. Now, as simplified as that is, this story of the little drop of milk is not exactly the stuff of children's books, even though I've been working on a really cute children's book about it. I don't know. It somehow got out of hand, and it turned into this 400-page tome. But I'm still working on it. Anyway, so it can't mean that you never, ever stirred it, because then mivla bola mifla lopolat. So then how would it ever have circulated and answered the other piece? So what Rebbe must have meant is that I believe Rebbe Yehuda is right. If you weren't stirring it when it first fell in, you let it sit for a second and then you stirred it. That's what he must mean. So Ella, what he meant was, I think Rebbe Yehuda is right. If you didn't stir it at the beginning, and that ossered the piece, and then you stirred it after it ossered that piece, right? Same thing about covering. You didn't cover it right up front. You waited for a moment, ossered what was ever there, and then you covered it. Now, if this is the way that Rebbe is paskening like Rebbe Yehuda, he is saying that Efshel Sochto is osser, because am I? If you believe that after the circulation begins, when you cover the pot or when you mix the pot, that's when the circulation begins. If you believe that you can redistribute the material in that first piece throughout the rest of the pot and now reduce the level of concentration in the piece, why won't we turn around and say, okay, now this piece is just a plain old piece of meat and it's no longer basar b'cholov? I'll tell you why. Because, it absorbed, but then it actually disabsorbed. It was palat. So it ended up exuding all of the milk that it absorbed. So obviously, Rebbe is telling me, kasavar efsher lesochato asur. So now we have a clear shita. If you could squeeze it out, it makes no difference. Once it becomes an avela, it is usur. Now, when Rebbe said, that's what I believe about Rebbe Yehuda, but then what does Rebbe Yehuda believe? Rebbe is obviously saying, that's what I would say is right about Rebbe Yehuda. What's wrong about Rebbe Yehuda is that Rebbe Yehuda is claiming that even if he was stirring it the whole time, it would be usur. But why is that? Michlal de Rebbe Yehuda Sava Kinir, even Mitchilava Atzof, Vichisya Mitchilava Atzof. You're telling me that according to Rebbe, Rebbe is saying Rebbe Yehuda himself, I disagree with. Because Rebbe Yehuda himself holds, even if it was being stirred or covered and circulating the entire time, it would still be usur. Now, that doesn't make any sense, because then there was no time for the chaticha to get the extra concentration of milk that would have given it the din of novela, right? So why in the world does Rebbe Yehuda himself not agree with what Rebbe is saying? Halo bala kamal. You never had an opportunity for that single piece to have a higher concentration of milk in it. Answers the Gemara. Now, this is a new issue. Rebbe Yehuda only says that it's usur in such circumstances because he believes that the guy that was stirring was looking at his phone and watching YouTube at the same time, and therefore he did not do a good job of stirring. And he may think he covered it, but he left a little piece open in the side, and the steam was coming out, and meanwhile he was watching steamy YouTube. He didn't even notice. So therefore, he makes a gezeira that it's us. Okay, that's a new issue. And in fact, in that we never saw Rav's opinion about that, we have no reason to suspect that Rav said that. So now, basically, we've got the issue of Chaticha Nases Levela. We've got the issue of Efshe Lefolto, obviously remains usur. We have a machlokus about whether we need to be gozer shema lo nir yafe yafe or shema lo kisa yafe yafe, and we have a clear shita, at least in this one direction, that Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe both agree efshe lefolto asur. They both agree min bemino is asur. And the only disagreement we have so far is about this new Gezera Shema Lonir Yafe Yafe. That is our current situation. We have not yet proven that there is a Shita among the Tanaim that definitely would say Efshe Lefolto is Mutar. So we've only proven half of our contention. We started and we said it's Tanoihi. We've shown that there is definitely one Tana here, and that's Rebbe and Rebbe Yehuda, that agree that Efshe Lefolto is usur. Now I am waiting for the next part of the proof. The next part of the proof is, as we are about to continue, Omar Mar, Rebbe also said that I believe that the Chachamim are right in the event that you did actually stir it right away or covered it right away, which is obviously what it must mean. But let's just go through the steps to prove that that's what it means. It says, the Chachamim are right, I believe, in the event that you stirred it. Now, when you say you stirred it, what do you mean? Do you mean you didn't stir it in the beginning and you stirred it only afterwards? Is that what you mean? That's ridiculous. Because Rebbe just explained that that's precisely what he does not believe. Rebbe said, I believe if you didn't stir it right up front, then if you stir it afterwards, you're doomed. Because then you've got a chaticha nasis nevela, and you are circulating it among the entire pot, and therefore the whole darn pot's going to be us, right? So he couldn't amend that. Ilei menir besof, velo nir betchila, or chisa basof, velo chisa betchila. That's absurd. Rebbe just said that I believe that in that case, Rebbe Yehuda is right. So what he must mean to say is that I believe the chachomim are right if you were stirring it the whole time. So that while the drop of milk fell in from your coffee while you were stirring it, it was fine because that coffee drop went through the entire mixture because it was circulating beautifully from beginning to end. And therefore, it means, but that implies that the Rabbanan themselves hold that even if you didn't stir it the whole time. Uh-oh, so what's their opinion? If you didn't stir it the whole time, and when they say you stirred, Rebbe is saying when they stirred it, it means even if they just stirred it at the end? So in other words, Rabbanon hold that even if first it became filled with super concentrated milk, and now you stirred it, it would still be okay. What? How could that be? Don't Rabbanon hold near besov v'lo near betchila? Chisa besov v'lo chisa betchila would still be mutter? How could it be mutter? Aha! It would only be mutter if you hold efshel l'sochato mutter. Because here the Rabbanon are talking about a case which is purely taste in one piece. And nonetheless, when that one piece is now mixed and circulates in the entire soup, all of a sudden that one piece also becomes mutter. So in other words, we're understanding Rebbe's vision of the Chachamim to be saying, as long as that single drop of milk was ultimately circulated among the entire mixture, and it did not have enough taste to impact the entire mixture, everything, including the first piece, is mutter. That's how Rebbe is understanding the Chachamim, and it's a very clear in the language that that's what the Chachamim seem to be saying. We're talking about a story of a drop of milk. That's all we're talking about. Now, that's the simple way of understanding this. And according to that, we have a clear machlokas. Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe's personal opinion is that there are two issues over here. Number one, Efshel Sochto is Aser, and therefore Chaticha Naaseit Nevela. And what's more, since it's min bimino, once the taste of that piece gets into the mixture, all pieces, even 10,000 of them, are going to be usher because of the rule of min bimino isn't batel. The Chachamim, on the other hand, they say, well, first thing you got to do is take a look at the concentration. That's always the first problem. If there's a concentrate that's enough parts per that you end up, which is the one at 60, of course, if you have one part per 60, so then that would be enough in everything, then the whole thing would be usher. If you don't, the whole thing, including the first piece, is mutter. Even though the first piece might have gone through a period of super concentrated challah, but who cares? Right now, efshel sochto mutter, and there's no longer any super concentrate of challah, right? So we've got a very clear machlokas. Okay, now this part requires your thinking caps in order to keep clear all of the various issues. I don't think that Rabbi Barnea's idea of calling forth a genie is actually as good as putting on your thinking cap. Someone came up with that idea, made a big corporation, called it Anthropic and whatever, made billions of dollars, but nobody's thinking anymore. It's probably better not to call the genie and to actually try using your brains.
Rebbe is making a tempest in the teapot.
I'm working on it, Barn. I'll let you know next week. So, listen, I mean, you presented a very reasonable reading, but how about if I have a different reading? How about if I read the story not to be the story of the drop of milk? Maybe the story actually turned onto the piece of meat. So maybe the issue was this. The drop of milk, according to the Chachamim, has definitely ossered the first piece it fell on because of super concentration. Efshel sochto is osser. When the Chachamim said only if there's enough to osser the entire mixture, they didn't mean if there's enough in the drop of milk. They meant only if there's enough in the piece of meat that was first exposed to the milk to then osser all of the pieces, because we don't believe min bimino is in bottle. We believe, whether it's min bimino or min b'she'eino mino, it's always one part per 60. So now let's take a look and see. Is there 60 times this amount of meat? The first piece is definitely osser. Why? Well, because Efshel HaSochto is Usser. What makes you think that the Chachamim disagree with that? They agree Efshel HaSochto is Usser. They're only changing the story now to be focused on the piece of meat, because the only machlokas here between the Chachamim and Reb Yehuda is whether Min Bimino is Batel or not. And then it's just an extension of what we know is an existing machlokas. So with a slight change in the referent of the pronoun, because what was the pronoun? The pronoun was it. Kivan shen natna. What natna? Which natna? The tipa or the chaticha natna? So if we understand the antecedent over here is the piece of meat, and we've moved on from the story of the drop of milk, then everything makes sense. Maybe, actually. Everybody agrees the first piece is definitely us. Why? Because Efshel HaSochto L'Divrei HaKol Asur. And all the Chachamim are saying is, if you have Shishim in the pieces and in the Kippah and in the Rotav, connected the first piece, not connected the milk. The first piece is lost. That's Usur. There's no point in looking at that little drop of milk. It's already been subsumed by that big, mean piece of meat that's now possibly going to usher the entire mixture. So let's take a look. If there's enough in that one piece of meat to usher the rest of the mixture, then it's usher. But if it's not, well, min bimino is, there's no such thing as min bimino having a different proportion than min b'sheino mino, and therefore it will be completely batal. What's wrong with looking at it like that? So maybe Efshel HaSochto, everybody agrees, is usher. The only machlokas over here is about min bimino. And everybody's going l'shita. So Reb Yehuda is going l'shitato. Reb Yehuda always say, min bimino lo bato. And the Rabbanan are continuing what they say all over Shas. Min bimino is bato. You're creating like this whole new story when all that it depends on is whether our little children's book about the drop of innocent milk turned into a piece of meat. There's no reason to make a whole big shebang of an iser machlokas, whether Efshel HaSochto mutar aser, just because it makes a better story. So therefore, let's simplify matters and say that we're arguing about min bimino bato or not, right? Oh, man, says the Gemara, come off it. Hi, my, this is ridiculous. I love the way you focus on one issue. You say, here is a reasonable presentation. Yes, it's a reasonable presentation if you pay no attention to the words of what Rebbe was saying. Yes, of course, reasonable presentation. That's the whole point that Rebbe is trying to make. Look, think about it. If you understand things the way we understand things, that Iyam et Bishlama, the Rabbanan agree, this Rabbanan is not the Rabbanan who hold all over Shas, that Min B'mina is not... is bato. This Rabbanan agrees. Min bimino, we agree, is Kareb Yudas Rehulam. And that's how we were learning it, right? We were learning that the question only is whether it's Efshel HaSochto. And if it's Efshel HaSochto, then nothing is usher. We're not ready to agree that the first piece of meat is usher. Rebbe explained that the first piece of meat is the issue along with everything else. We did not switch into a discussion about one piece of meat, whether that piece of meat users, okay? So that means that the Rabbanan agree. If that piece of meat is not going to be bottle its time because of Efshel HaSochto, then everything will be users. That's how Rebbe explained it. No connection to min bimino. We're all agreed min bimino users. And the whole machlokas over here is basically, did that first piece of meat become super saturated with milk, and therefore it was never able to be mutter again because Efshel HaSochto is usher, which is what Reb Yehuda learns, or the Chachamim learn that Efshel HaSochto is mutter, and therefore Rebbe says, well, if you were basically mixing it from beginning to end, then I would agree with the Chachamim, of course. Why? Because the first piece never became usher. That's what the Machlokas was. So that would explain why Rebbe analyzed both the words of Rebbe Yehuda and the words of the Chachamim. Because what he's trying to show you is that both of them make perfectly good sense, except for both of them making the same mistake. What is that? The mistake is that you have to worry about the question of whether you're near Mitchila Vatsof. You don't have to worry about near Mitchila, about whether he was near Yofa Yofa. We don't have to worry about near Yofa Yofa. I disagree with that. And therefore, I'm telling you, Nirin Divrei Rabbi Yehuda in this case, and Nirin Divrei Chachomim in that case, because it's all a function of whether Efshel Asochto. Were you stirring up front, or were you not stirring up front? That's the only issue. And the way that Rabbi brings that out beautifully is by saying, look, it turns out that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachomim could both be completely accurate if you just adjust the period in which you were mixing. That's the whole point I'm trying to bring out. If you're telling me that Rebbe and the Chachamim and Rebbe Yehuda are arguing about min v'mino, what is Rebbe talking about when he says the Chachamim could be right depending on when you mixed it? I mean, that's not the issue. We're trying to paskin whether min b'mino is batel or min b'mino isn't batel. If that's all you're trying to say, so then just say, look, I agree with Rabbi Yehuda 100%, unless he was mixing it the whole time and then there never was an iser of min b'mino at all. Why is he bringing up the chachamim? It depends when you mixed it. Mixed it is only nogea efshel asochto, correct? When you mixed it. Who cares when you mixed it? I care if I believe Efshel Asochto is mutter. I care very much. And that's the whole point, is that we're focusing on when did you mix it? So Rebbe is trying to bring out that's the whole issue. The Chachamim could be right if it was mixed the way I say, and from beginning to end. Rabbi Yehuda could be right if it wasn't mixed from beginning to end the way I say. So that's what he's trying to show. The only issue is, when did you mix it? And forget about any other issue, because both the Chachamim and Rebbe Yehuda end up saying the same darn thing. It's only a question of the mixing time. Okay, how is the mixing time relevant? In terms of Efshel Asochto. If all Rebbe was trying to say is that I hold that min b'minai is usser, and furthermore, I hold that if it was mixed, it's not going to be min b'mino, so then just say, I think Rabbi Yehuda is right in the case that he didn't mix it right away. And I think Rabbi Yehuda is wrong in the case that he did mix it right away. That's all you need to say. There's no point in discussing anything about the Chachamim because there's nothing about the Chachamim that interests you. You're not coming to discuss, Rabbi, whether min b'mino is batel. You're coming to discuss the mixing time. So why bring up the Chachamim? The mixing time is not relevant to min b'mino, is it? So you're giving us no information. You just want to talk about the Chachamim for no reason? So obviously, if Rebbe brings up, I hold of Rebbe Yehuda in case X, and I hold of the Chachamim in case Y, and both of them could end up being right, there's only one way that both of them end up being right. Efshel Asochto is the issue, and if you mix from the beginning, so then there's no problem of Efshel Asochto. Lovely. So the Chachamim's case would be true if there was no problem of the piece of milk because it immediately was dispersed across the entire mixture. And I hold like Rabbi Yehuda in the event that the drop of milk was not dispersed initially throughout. That's all very clear cut. If Rebbe said that, then he obviously is talking about Efshel Asochto. And there's a ridiculous way of explaining what Rebbe said. You want to have your own explanation of Rebbe Yehuda and the Chachamim? Go ahead and write your own book. We're analyzing Rebbe's understanding of this machlokas. And Rebbe said, clear as a bell to anyone who's got brains, that what we're talking about is a machlokas tanoim about whether Efshel Asochto is mutter or not. And that's the bottom line. And when I say that's the bottom line, I say that's the bottom line. Vetulo midi. And now at this point, shut up already. I'm not interested in hearing anything else about it because it's so obvious. It's a waste of time. No, that's what tulo midi means. Just can we cut it, please, at this point? Thank you. No more. Okay. So now we know that we have a machlokas about Efshel Asochto mutter, aliba de chachamim, and Efshalo Sochto Aser, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, which is what we set out to prove, that there is a machlokes Tanayim regarding that one particular point of Efshalo Sochto. Fine. So this, we now are ready for a completely new sugya, but before,
could Rebbe please comment on why Rashi writes the whole sefer here? It's so rare.
No, yes, but it's not all that rare. Rashi often gives a psak based on a reading of the entire sugya, which is now finished. So when you get the words Vesulo Midi, okay, now it's time to wrap up. Rashi often does that, but since we don't paskin like any of the things Rashi says here, I didn't bother. saying it over. Okay, but before we move on to completely new issues, I think we were going to. Handy, I thought, had his hand up, but maybe now he's given up because of the Tulo Midi. He took it very much to heart. That's what I call really listening to the daf.
I'm going back and forth in my mind about whether I understand the relationship of Tanan and Ashadat Sostal Aser, which go together, but sort of contradict each other in a certain way. Does everybody see what I mean?
Well, I explained that, but weren't you here for the introduction?
I probably was.
So I explained that the easiest way to understand this, and personally the correct way to understand this, is that when it comes to the concept of Chaticha Nazeis Nevela in other issues, which makes far less sense, and indeed, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim, is not true. There's no Chaticha Nazeis Nevela in other Isurim. There would still be a question of whether Efshalo Sochto is Mutter or not. Because the question of Efshalo Sochto also has to do with whether you can redistribute in a mixture a super concentration that had affected a piece. But there's two ways of affecting a piece. One way is saying, well, since this piece is saturated with the taste of Isser, it itself has become Usser. Now, why the heck would anybody say such a thing? It's super saturated with the taste of Isser, but it didn't become Usser. It's only the taste of the Isser that's Usser. I mean, let's say that I know for a fact that this piece of meat was exposed to precisely 3 ounces of chelev, right? Now, this piece of meat did not have enough to be mavato in 180 parts, the chelev that we would have here to each ounce of chelev, so that we'd be able to be mavato echad b'shish. Okay, this piece now falls into a mixture. If the whole piece is usser, so then we've got 2 pounds of chelev here. But if the piece remains usser because of the amount of chalev that it absorbed, I know there's only 3 ounces of chalev here. So in this new mixture, even assuming that we have a total redistribution of the chalev that was in that piece, if you've got 180 ounces, you're going to be mavato of the chalev. So the guy, but what do you mean? The piece that fell in was 10 pounds. Who cares how big the piece that fell in is? I know for a fact how much taste of chalev was here. So why would I worry about the size of the piece? So if you hold chaticha naaseit nevela, then all of a sudden you're saying, for some weird reason, that since the Torah told us that there's an iser if something is tam ke'iker and it's not batol berov, tam ke'iker changes the din of the piece that has the tam. I don't know where you would get that from, says Rabbeinu Ephraim. Why would we say such a thing? Therefore, the concept of chaticha naaseit nevela on other issues is not applicable. But can you eat that piece of meat if you now have it drop into a big soup and basically it doesn't taste like anything anymore because it's been boiled into the soup? So did the original taste of the chalev leave that piece because of the redistribution of the food molecules or not? That's a different question. Can a supersaturated taste actually change the level of its concentration because it's now been put into a weaker concentration? Or do we say, whatever went into that piece, you're never going to get it fully redistributed. It's always going to be super saturated. Albeit, yes, obviously, it's not going to be as supersaturated as it was before. But do you know how much? Do you know the proportion of the molecules that left? No. So therefore, we're going to have to say that the supersaturated piece remains asur. That is called efshel esochto asur. Does that mean chatich anaseis nevela? Not in the least. It just means you won't be able to eat this piece. But it's not going to be nogea, min bimino, or anything like that. Right? That's the clearest understanding.
What? Not always, but say
again.
Rabbi's saying that Efshar itself, the Aser, is not the equivalent of Tzana. It's just that we can't eat the original piece.
Correct.
We can't eat it. We're not Tzana.
Right. But if that piece falls into something else, it only Asers proportionate to that, whatever proportion of it had the original taste. If you know what that is, you know how much fat fell in. So what's the problem? You know how much Nevela fell in. Why should you say this piece is the Nevela? It has the taste of a Nevela, which was a different piece, which was removed. It's not here anymore. How could I possibly create a new Nevela if the Nevela isn't here? All I have is the taste of the Nevela. So there I don't say Chaticha Naseh Nevela. That's the Rashba's approach to that sugya, and makes it tremendous.
And here I can't eat the original piece. Here I can't eat the original. I cannot eat the original piece, even though it's not a Nevela.
Right, because I can't tell you how much was redistributed. And that's a general rule. If you don't know, then you have to go, we do this throughout Taruvas. If you don't know how much tam was absorbed, then you're going to have to assume it's the whole thing has that tam. Fine, it's not that it is that thing, but it does have that tam. In the event that you know, then you know. I know exactly how much tam of Isser was here. If not, I have to be machmer because there's no way for me to determine. So that we said before, if you remember, we said, and mi yada? Is he going to be able to know how much there was? No, okay. So if you don't know, then you're going to have to be machmir. This is really very straightforward.
Good. I'm sorry I didn't get the first one. Thank you so much.
Yes, this is a very important thing to get clear because otherwise, like, it's like, what's going on? We made up a whole issue that is irrelevant. Okay, this brings us to the important moment in which we introduce an entire new world.
The utter Mishnah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the utter outer Mishnah. And we're ready for our exciting words of the famous Chazan, Sir Richard. And so now, gentlemen, we move on to completely new areas. And this is the story of organs that are problematic because of their contents. So they are ipso facto problems. Now we're going to be discussing three such organs, two in the Mishnah. So, first of all, we've got hearts. And hearts are problems because besides the muscle of the heart, which has the same amount of dam like all muscles that are being intensively used, and we know that we can take out that dam by salting, and that's what we do. But the heart, besides the organ itself being a muscle and being filled with the blood that was supplying oxygen to the muscle, the whole point of the heart is that it is pumping blood, and therefore it has chambers that are filled with blood. How do you get rid of that blood? You can't just salt the heart muscle and say, okay, now it's kosher. What are you talking about? Now it's kosher. It's got like 3 ounces of blood in it, pure blood. How are you going to do that? So you've got a problem with the heart. There's also something to take into consideration about heart muscle, which is unique and is going to make a big difference, lahalacha. And that is that since heart muscle is meant to be in contact with the blood that it's pumping, it has got to be something that will not interfere and interact with that blood and cause blood clots and anything else. It has to be extremely smooth on the inside of the heart chambers. That is called in the Gemara, shi'i. Shi'i means that it's sleek. It's completely smooth. So the heart muscle actually is in contact with blood in a way that allows no interaction. If that's the case, that leads us to an amazing halacha, that in the event that you ended up cooking a heart together with the blood in its chambers, the heart muscle will not absorb that blood because it's designed not to interact with blood. Beautiful. So that is a unique situation in which we say there's no belia, there's no absorption because of the special design of the heart. Okay, so that's one special organ. Now let's move on to another special organ. We already touched upon this, and that is the kechal, the udder. So now the udder is filled with these alveoli, and each one of these little tiny sacs is a milk container because it's a milk producer. So it is filled with milk. Now if you're going to cook a kechal, you would be cooking basar b'chalav, you would think. But the truth is, you'd be wrong, because milk is only usser when it comes out of a live animal. And usually, if you're cooking udders, they're not alive. And therefore, even cannibals have a real problem with this. It turns out that the udder is always dead by the time it's cooked. So now, that would mean that there is no real basar b'chalav here. So that's one issue. There's no issur d'oraisa on the cholav of a shchuta. There's another issue. The other issue is that milk is not called milk. Now, the Rabbanan answered it. Rabbanan said, even cholav of a shchuta, you're not allowed to drink. But there's one additional point, and that is it's only called milk once it actually is discharged from the sacs of the udder. If it was never discharged from them, and let's say it was broiled in place, wasn't boiled. If it was boiled, then the milk was forced out by the circulating water, right? But what if you just broil it in place? So if you broil it in place, you never got the milk out of the udder, and therefore there was no basar b'chalav. So that gives us another special situation. Now, the other special situation is not as universal. Every heart's got blood, and every udder's got sacs of milk. But not every tummy has milk in it. Only tummies of little nursing Mary had a little, one of those things, it's nursing, and therefore it is filled with milk. What is the din of milk that is inside of a young animal's tummy? So that is also a question of how do you get rid of that milk before cooking the animal if that is real milk? Again, that's going to get us into other complex issue because, as I'm sure you're aware, what happens with milk in the tummy is that it actually becomes mixed with the stomach chemicals, which are very useful for making, guess what? Cheese, right? Okay. So that is why we call the ingredient of the casein, we call it keva, because it's basically stomach lining. Now, when there's milk that is in that, then that milk becomes an agent that is used for being mamid cheese. And that's going to get us into other questions. But the Mishnah wants to discuss about the organs that are always a problem. Hearts always have blood, and udders always have milk. So now, let's talk about how you would get a kosher heart and a kosher kechal, a kosher udder. So, says the Mishnah, HaKechal Kora'o U'motziat Chalbo. So first, you have to tear it open to make sure that the milk has a way of getting out before you cook it. And when we say before you cook it, what we mean is before, this is how we understand the Mishnah now, before you broil it. But if lo kira'o, if you didn't, and you buried it without any kind of special treatment, you are not going to be over on eating basar b'chalav, because this is not milk in terms of the Torah. This is a chalav of a shchuta, And it says Chalav Ha'em, not the Chalav HaVeshchuta. And therefore, the question is, was there an Issur D'Rabbanan or not? That we'll discuss in the Gemara. Now let's move on to the heart. So, the heart. You would have to tear it open to be able to take out its blood, besides what you normally would have to do to the meat, that is to say, the muscle itself. But if you didn't, and you actually cooked it the way it was, you are not going to be over. Why not? If it's pure blood. Because, as we'll see, the Gemara elsewhere explains, which Rashi brings here, that when it says you won't be over, it's because we're talking about the heart of a bird. The heart of a bird doesn't have a kezias of dam. And therefore, since it cannot hold in its chambers a kezias, it's usher midiraisa because of chatzi shir usher min ha-Torah, but you won't be over, meaning diraisa, and therefore you will not get malchus, and there's no chiyav of korasan, right? Okay. So now, let us take a look at how to understand this. Amar Rebbe Zera Amarav. You know, when the Mishnah said that you're not going to be over on that kechal, it didn't mean you're not going to be over. It meant it's kosher. You could just go right ahead and eat it. So if you took an udder, never took out the milk, and you broiled it, it would be completely kosher up front, even midrabanan. What? But the Mishnah said you're not going to be over. Doesn't that mean meyavaro de lo amar, you won't be over, but you're going to have, you've been doing a derabanan iser. You can't do it up front. How could Rav say you can do it even up front? That's not what the Mishnah says. Nah. The truth is it's not even us. So bedino di suranami leka. And why did we use the language of eno over? Because if you take a look at the seifa, since by the case of the lave, which was the second part of the Mishnah, over there it says you have to tear it open and take out the blood. And if you didn't, you won't be over. Now, there it means exactly what it says, because it's certainly usher, because it's a chatzi shir, it's blood of a little bird. But that's usher, miniraisa chatzi shir. Therefore, I have to use the word of eno over in the Seifa, so I use the word eno over in the Resha. But in the Resha, the truth is, there's no Isser whatsoever. Once you broil this, so then what would be Isser about it? The milk never turned into milk. So there, in the Seifa, there it means only you weren't over, but it's definitely Isser because Chatzishir. So because of that, in the Reish, it used the language of eno over. But of course, says Rav, what it really means is it's not even usser. Wow, that's a very creative way of understanding the Mishnah. But in fact, here's a braita that seems to back Rav up. Lema misayeli. Hakol koro umotzi et chelbo. Lo kiro'o eno overala. Halev kor'o umotzi etomo, lo kira'o. Now here's the only new thing that this bright is introducing. If you didn't tear it open before, you could always tear it open after. What? Yes, because as I explained to you, the heart muscle is engineered not to interact with blood. And therefore, if in the end you cooked it with its blood, it will not absorb its blood. And because of that, if you remove the blood afterwards and you tear open the heart, you get rid of all of the blood, now you can eat the heart muscle. Fine. And therefore, it's amazing that it's the one case where even after it's cooked, you can ex post facto tear it open and eat it. Now note that the braita doesn't say, and if you cook the udder, you could tear it open. You don't need to tear it open because an udder doesn't have anything that's usher if it was broiled. The milk never was exuded and never had a din of milk, and therefore what's the point of tearing it open? No need. So you see from this braita exactly what Rav was saying. The lave, which contains blood, that you have to tear open, ex post facto. But the kechal that does not contain milk, there's no point of opening it open, tearing it open. What for? Well, I mean, yes, that's one way of reading the braita. But if I wanted to, I could read the braita to be a complete disproving of everything Rav said. I could say maybe the braita is saying It ain't going to help you to tear open that udder. It's utterly usser. And therefore, it's too late. So maybe it's saying the opposite of Rav. I don't know. Maybe Dilma Levu, the Sagi Levikriya. Only the heart can actually become mutter if subsequently you take the blood out. But the Kral, it's too late. Now it's Basar V'Chalav and it won't help to do Kriya. I don't know. Maybe that's what it means. So you can't bring a riot. Now, there's a totally mirror image of the way that we quoted Rav, in which what Rabbi Zera claimed that Rav said was just the opposite. And that is, Amar Rabbi Zera, this is the Ikiri Amri, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav, it's true, Eino over a love meteorite, but it's still usser, the exact opposite of what Rav said. So, it is usser. And in this version, we say, yeah, that's what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said, Eino over a love, mashma. Only mi'avru de'lo over, but it is usher. And here we use the raya that we said before to be the answers to why this is not. But they know maybe the Mishnah means that it is actually not usher. Not like Rav is currently claimed to be saying by Rabbi Zera. Maybe the Mishnah holds you don't even have to worry about it and you can eat it. But why did it say you're not over? And that's because I did the boil Mr. Seifa. Since in the end, we're going to have to say Halev, you do need to cut it open, because if not, you've got actual blood there. So Motzia Domo, Lokura O, Eno over. And over there, the din is you're not over because of the special engineering of the heart, that it doesn't interact with the blood in its chambers. So that's specially over there. In that case, you're not over, but there's still going to be an iser. So maybe that's why it said it here too. Ain't no overlap, but maybe it is a completely mutter, the way the original Rav had said. And here again, we do the mirror image of what we did before. Tashma, in this version, we're going to bring a raya against Rav from the Braita that we've previously used to bring a raya for Rav. And in this case, we're going to read the Braita like this. Hakal koro motziyev chalbo, lo krao eno overalav, halev koro motziyev domo, lo koro, and here comes the new piece of info from the Braita. You can always tear it open afterwards. Mashma, you only need to tear the lev, but you don't even need to tear the kal, which means it's mutter. No, maybe what it means is that the lev, you can make it kosher by ex post facto tearing, but the kal, you can't ever make it kosher. Maybe that's what it means. The kal lo sage le bikriya. And we do actually have a braita that teaches like the first Lashon of Rav, and that the meaning of the Mishnah is that it is completely mutter up front if you broiled the Kal. Tanya Kalishna Kama de Rav, Kechal Shebishlo. Now it's true that it uses the word boil. However, as Rashi points out, and we've spoken about this before, in Divrei HaYomim, we find that we often use the word boil for something that is broil, because bishul just means cooked in the broadest terms. You could cook things by boiling them, and you could cook things by roasting them. And it says there that they vayivashlu et ha-pesach. Now, obviously, they didn't boil the carbon pesach, because that would have asered it, and it has to be bidafka, rosho, kira'av, and so on, over the fire. You can't boil it. You can't eat it bashel mevushal b'mayim. So it's obviously not referring to real boiling, and when it says bishlu, what it means is they broiled. Fine. So that is what we're talking about. So it says over there that in the event that you broiled the kechal with its own milk, it would be mutter to eat it. But a keva, now here's the first time that we're getting to that little Mary had a little lamb tummy, and the keva shebishla b'chelba, that is usher. Why? That's not fair. Why are we actually prejudiced against little lambs? Well, it has nothing to do with prejudice, believe it or not, even though all issues, of course, are only based on prejudice from the beginning of time. But in the old days, they used to claim it wasn't really prejudice against lambs. It was logical. Ha ha. And what's the logic? The logic is that a lamb's tummy has milk in it that came from outside into its tummy. And it was pure milk, and it remains milk at least for a while. It's not considered to be digested perish. It's not considered to be simply fecal matter. And the other one, the udder, is not kanus. That milk has not as yet become milk. It's not that it absorbed milk and now it's holding it in those alveoli. It's that it's creating the milk and the milk never came out. And therefore, that is not considered to be milk at all. So this seems to be saying clearly that there's a big difference between the udder itself, which is mutter if it was cooked, which is exactly the first lotion of Rav, and therefore it's very reasonable for us to assume that is exactly what Rav was referring to. Now, when it says you have to tear the udder, how exactly do you tear it? Omer Rav Yehuda, you tear it chassi ve'erev, and you press it against a wall. So it has to be length, width, torn both directions to allow milk to come out of it, and you need to squeeze it. So press it against the surface, press it against the wall. That gets the milk out of. Obviously, it doesn't have to really get out all the milk, because as we said, the whole thing is gzeirat rabbanan. There is no real milk midiraisa here whatsoever. Even if the milk does come out, it's a chalav of a shchuta and is not usher. And Rebbe Elazar actually told his butler, "You tear the udder for me and roast it, and I'm happy to eat it." Karali va'ana echol. Yeah, so it's a big deal. Any two-year-old knows that. I mean, that's the Mishnah. Ma'akam Ashman, Masnizini. Ah, did he tell his butler, make sure you tear it shesiva erev? No. Did he tell his butler, make sure you press it against the wall? No. So you think if Rebbe Elazar is telling his butler, instructing him how exactly he's supposed to be able to eat, you think he wouldn't have told him exactly how to do it? He would just say, tear it? That's the Chiddush that Rebbe Elazar is saying. You don't need to tear it. You don't need any of that. It's fine without doing that. Now, Yalta, oh boy, Yalta was a handful. We've got stories of Yalta. When Yalta wants something, whatever Yalta wants, Yalta gets. And so, when Yalta said this to Rav Nachman, you can be sure she put him on notice. So she says to him, look, Michte, kol da'asa lan rachmana shor lan kavase. Beautiful insight. The Torah never asserted Klal Yisrael from every pleasure in the world. So if there's an Isser, there's got to be an equivalent Heter. Because as we know, we've already seen this. The whole idea is if you don't eat everything that is available, you're Asid Litenis Adin, as we just discussed. So look, everything that I know of that the Torah Asser gave you an opportunity to enjoy. So look, we're not allowed to eat blood, but we're allowed to eat liver. And liver essentially tastes exactly like it's pure blood, okay? We're not allowed to sleep with a woman who's Anita. But what if you get turned on with blood, you know? Well, you can always sleep with a woman after she gives birth and she's in Yemei Tohar. And you can pretend you're sleeping with Anita. I mean, if this turns you on, whatever turns you on, you got to have an opportunity for it. So if there's Anita, you're mutter in Dam Tohar. We're not allowed to eat the chalav of a behemoth, so we're allowed to eat the chalav of a chaya. We're not allowed to eat chazir, but we're allowed to eat the shibuta fish's moach, which we know tastes precisely the same as chazir. So if there's a kosher restaurant that's serving chazir, it's mucha de shibuta. Great. We saw before that the giruta bird is usher. True. But fish's tongue tastes exactly like Giruta bird. And therefore, if you want a sandwich of Giruta, all you need to do is order a kosher sandwich of Giruta, which is made out of fish tongues. You're not allowed to marry an Eishes Ish. Ah, but you can marry a woman who just walked out of Beis Din with a get, and she's about as pure Eishes Ish as you can imagine, and you can sleep with her. What do you think about that? Almost as much fun. And you're not allowed to marry a Eshet Ach. Ah, but you're allowed to marry a Yavama. So, therefore, you get to marry an Eishes Ach. You're not allowed to marry a Kutit in this week's Parsha, but you're allowed to take a Yafas Tohar. And I insist on eating something that tastes like Basar V'Cholav. I don't know, what are you going to give me? How am I going to live my life without ever having tasted Basar V'Cholav? I'm outraged. Move. So he calls in the chef, and he says, Zvikula Kachle, go and roast some chol for her on the spit. And as we said, according to Rav, that's mutter, and there's no problem. But you're not allowed to do it lechatchila, are you? Didn't we learn that you have to be kor'o? And you can't just put it in the spit? I say, says Reb Nachman, that only means if you're going to be cooking it in water, because that takes out the milk. And I hold for roasting, you don't need to do anything. We will pursue this tomorrow. But meanwhile, saved by the bell from Yalta. All right. Yalta's got a bad name because of the Second World War. And, you know, we need to remember it wasn't her fault. It was basically trying to please. It's the same idea. Trying to please somebody's very hard to please. Over there it was Stalin. But it's still the same old story of Yalta. All right,
everybody. Such a strange source. Why not such important klalim coming from a Tanai, a Rav, what a Yalta of all places? What's this Indian of Yalta? Who was she?
She was super duper. All of our super duper stuff comes from women. Take a look right there at Ori. She's ready to attack. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Bezrat Hashem, Besorot Tovot, to be continued tomorrow.